Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single Tolkien novel that I read. As I read it, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Joining me today, like normal, is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And this is our first podcast in, what, 5 weeks? 6 weeks?
Yep.
Because Juliana went into, she went to rehab, not because of drugs or anything, not like that kind of rehab.
No.
Tell people about it.
It's a medical rehabilitation to ensure employability. Basically, that's what the, you know, the pension insurance in Germany is doing to make sure that people recover well enough so that they can work, so they continue to work. It's like a prevention kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and I did that for 5 weeks.
And that's for your MS, multiple sclerosis diagnosis, which you were in, that was like, what, 2013 or 2014 or something?
Yeah, the diagnosis was 2013. And to be honest, actually, I could have had this every 2 years because that's kind of like, you know, to make sure that there's no progression and stuff like that. And I haven't had one yet. So this is my first medical rehabilitation.
So it's something, so the MS is something that you've been managing, or we've been managing between the two of us, you know, mostly you, but I'm just saying it has been part of our lives for a long time. We never really talked about it. We never really tell anybody about it. It's just not something that comes up.
No, because it's not something that, you know, okay, what this rehab was actually really helpful, not only for me to, you know, get away and have other experiences, do a bit more activity and sport and stuff. It was also really good for me to clarify a few things that even though if you cannot see a disability, that doesn't mean it is not there. And that doesn't only count for outside people who look at you and can't see that you're not well. It also counts for yourself.
Yeah.
And so it was really, really helpful for me to clarify that even though I'm not a person that you can see limp around or use a cane or even a wheelchair, which isn't inherently a bad thing at all. However, I still have symptoms that can be quite debilitating.
Yeah, and that debilitate, whatever the word is, it was sort of, that was kind of something which would like set the schedule for the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast.
Often, yes.
Because we'd be like, all right, we've got a podcast, I've read a book or you've read a book or we've both read a book. Yep. We're like, do it. But we've pretty much had to clear our diary for like a day for you to have enough energy to record a podcast and then do like anything else at all on the same day could be too much, or the next day or whatever.
So, absolutely.
So it is
and
something.
So I thought, oh, I'm managing quite well, but it turns out I'm not actually.
Certainly for the last few years, for the last like 18 months or so, it's been
something
harder.
Like that. It's been declining, and it was helpful for me. It was good. And I also noticed that I actually don't have any problems with sports of activity or moving my body. It's just I also needed to change a bit of my mindset about it. And so
expectations and mindset. Yeah.
Yes. And so I'm very hopeful that I will continue on this path of a bit more activity, bodily activity. And I will also make some changes generally and maybe also be a bit more open and straightforward with what's going on.
Yeah. With other people, with yourself and with other people.
Exactly.
So you were there and you're like, I'm going to read The Silmarillion because that was the last book Luke talked about. Mm-hmm. Not really the right kind of.
It's on my iPad. I got it from the library. I rented it out multiple times by now because I thought, I'm gonna start reading it. It's just too hard of a thing to get into.
Yeah.
While you're managing all the things in rehab, so I didn't actually get to it.
Yeah,
that
I know
much.
It's understandable for me though. Juliana away for 5 weeks. I know that I'm not going to do a podcast.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, what's something that can fill my audiobook listening for 5 weeks?
A marathon sort.
which includes a trip to, you know, where did I go? Anyway, sailing
Poland,
for
Czechia. Yeah,
no. I'm saying across the Atlantic. So I already sailed across the Atlantic, and you know, I've been toning down podcasts or whatever. Either way, I thought The Lord of the Rings is good. And I was like, yeah, but maybe we're going to do an episode about each book. But then what are the books? Because there's like 6 books, but then there's 3 books and there's more. So for those who listened to the last episode about The Silmarillion, know that I read the first half of The Fellowship of the Rings, was like, I want the Silmarillion to be like my framing for this story.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Like within the books, they're like, hey, all of this is translated from the Red Book of Westmarch or whatever it is. And I was like, oh, that's the Silmarillion. So I wanted to get all of the other half of the Red Book of Westmarch into my head.
Right.
And then go with this.
So yeah. you interrupted your reading.
Yeah, I interrupted
experience.
My reading.
Yeah.
And so I read book one, which is The Ring Sets Out, which is the first half of Fellowship of the Rings.
Right.
And then I read The Silmarillion, and then I read the next 5/6 of the Lord of the Rings, which is the rest of it. And
okay.
And I was thinking about, well, how are we going to review this? Because the way that the movies work, it's 3 movies. The way that the books are often published is a set of 3. However, the first time I read this book, I mean, the only other time previously that I read The Lord of the Rings, it was a single collection. It was like a single volume.
Right.
So you start off on page one.
And finish
the
whole
thing. Concerning Hobbits or whatever the first page, the first bit of the, yeah. like, after the author's introduction or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you're like, right, just go into it. And I just read it all the way through. And I was like 14 or 15 years old at the time. I might have said a different age in the last podcast, but I remember which bedroom I was in. So between 13 and 15 years old.
Yes.
Is when it would have been my age range when I read The Lord of the Rings. And and then the movie started coming out like 5 years after that. So So back then, the book was kind of a lot more clear in my mind. And I read a lot more fantasy back then.
Yeah.
All of these like long fantasy series. And so, like David Eddings and Piers Anthony and lots of other authors who now I'd be like, yeah, probably not my kind of thing anymore.
Okay.
But when you're like 15, 13, 14, 15, 16, for me, that's kind of more of like back in the day, I would read just as much fantasy as I would science fiction. And of course, Lord of the Rings was just one of those books.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just one of those books. Of course, it was like one of the more chunky books that I'd read.
I guess also it's kind of like what is available in the library. And often the section of science fiction and fantasy is just
one big
section. Yeah. So I guess you also just read along, the bookshelf.
Yeah, yeah, I did. Like I say, I would tell the story many times on this podcast that I'd go to the library, Barnard Castle Library, and I would just start at A because there wasn't a science fiction or fantasy section. It was all just mixed in. There was just like general fiction. So I'd go along and I'd pull a book out, and if there was a dragon or a spaceship on the front cover, I would read it and then I would go to the next one. So I started off at A, which meant that, like I say, Piers Anthony, the reason I use that as an example is because it's A. And so I was like, oh, I just read loads of Piers Anthony, just like novel after novel after novel. I'd just get like 5 or however many books you could get from the library, like 4 or 5 books. Yeah. I would get them.
And they would all be standing one after the other.
This is what I'd do, like every week, one lunchtime per week, I would go down from school, from Teesdale School, down to the library, get a new set of books, take them up there, and then sit in the library at school and read them. And, just generally get vacuum up these books.
Yes.
And I went through the entire library reading every book which had either a spaceship on the front cover or a dragon on the front cover or something which looked, relevant in that way.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I think what we'll do on this podcast, I think we will split this up into 3 podcasts. But... and we'll frame them by, the contents of the books. And so we'll start off with Lord of the Rings. And I've got lots of things I want to talk about, but instead of it just being like, oh, just generally talk about it, I thought I'd split it up into like these 6 sections that I have, which are the 6, the 6 books. Because I think, this is the way that I'm going to review it anyway, that each one of these books has kind of like a central focus about what it is about. The first one is obviously Hobbits, because they start off in the Shire and they go on a Hobbit adventure, which feels like something very much out of The Hobbit,
Yeah.
There's very little outside of just what the Hobbit's experiences are.
Okay.
And then book 2 is Elves, because you start off with the Council of Elrond and you go through the Mines of Moria, but you pretty much end up down in, you meet Galadriel and, down in Lothlórien, which is more elves stuff.
There's
other stuff going on, but that's when you really get to know the elves more and, you spend more time with the elves.
Yeah.
The next one is Wizards and Ents, which is, you get to know, there's a whole stuff with Gandalf and Saruman and it's all about that. There's other battles going on, Helm's Deep, but it's a lot about this dynamic between, this proxy battle between Gandalf and Saruman.
Yes.
Book 4 is like Gollum and the Ring's power. So you're back to the that kind of thing there.
Yeah.
Book 5 is Men or more specifically Kings, which is sort of like the battles and the of Pelennor Fields and the siege of Minas Tirith.
Yeah.
And that's where Aragorn gets to shine and the other kings are like dying or killing themselves and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then the book six is Hobbits again, because then it's very much about Sam and Frodo completing their quest. And then you follow the Hobbits all the way back to the Shire.
Okay.
Scouring of the Shire, get to know how the Hobbits have grown during their adventures and, you know, what they're doing.
Okay.
And then you get some appendices,
yes,
like that. So let's start off with we'll go through these things in order, and we'll see how far we get. Let's say
I like the separation of the things into six entities, and you keep saying books. So
what they're called within the book.
Oh, they are literally called books.
Yeah, book one, the ring sets out. Book two, the ring heads south. Book three,
nice.
Don't actually remember what the titles are of these ones.
Okay, so it's rather than like chapters or like kind of the accumulation is books.
Well, here's the thing with the movie, they're switching back and forth. Like Sam's over here, Frodo's over here. Well, no, Sam and Frodo are together. Let me say, Merry is here, Pippin is here, Sam and Frodo are over there. And then Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli are over here. And sometimes you're like, wow, we're in four places at once. But they're switching around between them. But in the book, they don't do that. Once at the end of the Fellowship of the Rings, you know, Frodo... Again, I'm doing all of this because you've not read Lord of the Rings. You just watched the movies. And you've only just watched the movies for the first time. But they go across the river in a boat. And then Legolas and Gimli and Aragorn go and chase down Merry and Pippin in the other direction.
Yeah.
At that point, you pick up book two. And it just follows one of those stories. It only follows, you know, they've taken the hobbits to Isengard. That's all it is. The whole of the next bit is Isengard, Rohan, the Ents, you know, Fangorn Forest. And for literally half of the book, like half of the entire middle section of the book, which is the Two Towers, Sam and Frodo aren't in there at all. At the halfway point, we pick back up with the story and the other guys are completely forgetting. And then at the start of, you know, the Return of the King, we just go and do the Merry and Pippin side.
Right.
And you see everything that from their point of view again, Frodo and Sam not mentioned up until the 50% mark. And then it's all Sam and Frodo from that moment on.
Right.
So
it's just really, really difficult for me to understand like the three sections that they have in the movies, the Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers. That is that anywhere mentioned in the book?
Yeah, well, it was Lord of the Rings. The thing is, it's written as a novel.
Yes.
And when you split it up into three,
it
kind of makes sense that if you want three books, those would be the three books.
Okay.
But it is very much not like modern fantasy, where you'll have a chapter from this point of view, which can be a long, chunky chapter, and then you'll have another chapter from a different point of view, and then you'll go over here into that city and have another point of view, and then you'd go back to the first one, and then you go to the third one, and then you go back to the second one, and back to the first one, you know, and you switch
around.
Like this
interweaving stuff.
Yeah, this interweaving thing, like, this is happening at the same time here, and this is happening at the same time, and meanwhile over here, it doesn't do that.
Okay.
There are literally, here's what's happening for a literal third for the first like all of the Fellowship of the Rings, and then it goes, here's what's happening here, here's what's happening here, here's what's happening here, here's what's happening here, and then the book
ends.
And that
happens at like the same time.
Yeah.
So okay.
A lot of it's happening at the same time, but we just go, right, now here's a month worth of these guys.
Yes.
Like literally we're going to spend a month with these guys and they're just going to be trekking and it's going to be drudgery.
Okay.
And then they're like, and it even says at some point, and at the same time they reach this crossroads, Aragorn, remember when we talked about Aragorn, what he was doing, that's where he was in his journey, but you can't do that in movies.
Yes.
And so that's why I'm not going to review each one of, I'm not going to give a rating to each one of these individual novels, which are published, you know, each individual third of the complete novel. For me, I went into this in the same mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't actually, because I'd read the Silmarillion and I was like, oh, let's just read this book. And I got to the end of this first book and I was like, oh, well, this is not good. This is not the end of a novel. Like, you get to the end of
the Silmarillion.
I read the Silmarillion in between the first novel.
Okay.
But I got to the end of The Fellowship of the Ring.
Yes.
And it finished. And I was like, this is a very unsatisfying end to a novel.
Okay.
And then the next novel picks up. And I'm like, this is a very unsatisfying beginning to this novel.
Okay.
And then you get to the middle and you're like, those characters just disappear for 50% of the book. And you get to the end of it and you're like, well, that's a very unsatisfying end to a second novel.
Right.
And then you pick up the third one and you're like, well, this is a very unsatisfying start to a novel. They're not three novels.
Yeah.
It is very much written as a single thing. And the first time I read it as a single thing. And this time I was reading, I was like, well, what we should do is just finish up this first one and then I'll make some notes and this can be its individual. But I can't give an individual rating to different parts of this novel.
In the way it wasn't even intended to.
Yeah, I'm going to give a rating to the entire, my entire experience of reading, or in this case, listening to the audiobook of Lord of the Rings.
Right.
And I will give that, well, I might as well give it now. Let's say 4.5 stars, because this was really good. Again, part of it is nostalgia, part of it is
absolutely.
But also, there's just so much in this to think about. And all the stuff that was there in the Silmarillion is also here, but told like in a much more zoomed in kind of way.
Yeah.
I was thinking, maybe we should just do an episode which is just comparing the movie and the, you know, comparing the books to the movies, and then we'll do another one which is just focused on the book. But I'm not sure if that's possible to separate them out, because your experience of this story, in each time I say a character name, you only have the movie.
Yes.
And many people may only have the movie, so I'm not going to try and separate that out. So let's say 4.5 stars for my entire reading experience, and I'll give some I'll start off by some of the reasons why this was not I couldn't give it a full 5 stars.
Okay, sounds good.
So my aim was to go into this book with, or to continue on with this book, to finish off this book with the Silmarillion as like the foundation of what I think each thing should be, and like trying to put aside my conceptions of what's going on. I didn't want to see it just through the eyes of the movie. I wanted to have kind of my own, like to be reminded of my own preconceptions about what's going on my own imaginations, the things that's going on in my head when I read it when I was 15. Can I recapture some of that? And that did help. That did work. And a lot of the descriptions, especially of like the landscapes and the castles and the trees and the forts and stuff, I remember watching the movie for the first time and I was like, wait, that can't be right, because there's meant to be fields here, like the Pelennor Fields. I was like, yeah, fields. There's like hedgerows and there's farm. This is like, it was like that, what do they call the breadbasket? Like it's where they grew all the food. That is, this massive city is there. This is where they grew all the fields, and there was a wall around these fields. So even when they're being attacked, if they kept the enemies outside, they could reprovision the cities with these fields. There's like orchards here and farmland there and farm. And so it was a battle across these fields.
Yes.
Was in my head. And then in the movie, I'm just sort of like, oh no, it's like, you know, these rolling, you know, hills with blue sky. It's like a Windows screensaver with like elephants and orcs or whatever. And I was like, no, it's meant to be like. So that's what was in my head when I saw the, you know, Return of the King movie in 2002 or 2003, whenever it came out. So that was actually good. I did kind of get into those descriptions of like, oh yeah, this is what Moria is like, and this is what Rivendell is like. And I kind of re-remembered by reading the descriptions of those places, and I recaptured a lot of that.
Yes.
And there's quite a lot of the action and like the dynamics and like the motivations of different characters, which are different in the movie than in the book.
Yeah.
In here, I was like, yes, I'm recapturing the reason why people are doing this, and they're discussing this, and oh, I'm going to do this because of this. And I was like, oh yeah, remember, like the first time I watched the movies in 2001, I was like, why are they changing this? And in some cases, the movie is better. Like, it's kind of, it makes more sense in the movies.
Yeah. And you have to change things, because you can't visually always express the same things as you can describe in a novel. Of course not.
Yeah. So here's the thing that didn't work in this case is the characters themselves.
Okay.
Because the audiobook narrator is Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
And if you don't know who Andy Serkis is, he's Gollum. He's Smeagol. He's like an actor who was there. He was on set for like two movies. He was down in New Zealand for like 2 years working on this movie. Yeah. Surrounded by the
huge director. Impact.
Yeah, like massive, became a massive star. Gollum or Smeagol or Gollum himself is like one of the greatest cinematic characters ever. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you think about like some amazing villains who are also sympathetic, you know, these characters, like you might as well be like, well, there's Darth Vader and there's Gollum and there's like a few other people who are like at that level, but Gollum is one of them there.
Yeah.
Also, because Andy Serkis is just a really good actor.
Yeah.
He can do very, very, very good impressions of all of the other characters. Yeah. So here's me going, right, I'm going to go into this neutral and I'm going to imagine Sam, how I remember Sam with it. And here he's like, oh no, Mr. Frodo. And I'm like, oh, he's doing the accent. He's not just doing the accent. He's doing a Sam Gamgee impression from the character in the movie. And he does it with all of the characters, like really well, in a way which is very impressive. But it did mean that every time Gandalf spoke, I'm like, oh, I'm not hearing Gandalf speak in my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing Andy Serkis doing an impression of Ian McKellen acting Gandalf with the direction of Peter Jackson saying, no, this is how you say the line, him doing it. And then and that line may or may not be from the book itself.
Yes.
So that's really, really difficult to separate. There's loads of dialogue. There's loads of stuff in the book which isn't in the movie, but it's all kind of like refracted through those things.
Yes.
But then there's some lines which are both in the book and in the movie, and the same character says them in both. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you're literally doing a recreation of that line from the movie.
The dubbing. Yeah, like, literally.
It's like you might as well have just like clipped the audio, like the ADR recording, additional dialogue recording bit, and just inserted that here because you're doing such a good impression. And you're putting in the same emotional delivery and the same meaning into that as in the movie. So the idea of me going, oh, I'm going to listen to the audiobook and get I'm going to not watch the movie, I'm just going to get the text. I picked the wrong audiobook. There are, of course, two other audiobook narrations of this from, over the
years. But would they be this good?
No, and here's the thing. I don't regret this at all. Yeah. Because, again, I am well trained in listening to audiobooks and then removing the performance of the audiobook narrator. Yeah. I've had now 15 years worth of experience listening to audiobooks, and there are some audiobook narrators who add a lot by their performances, and I'm happy with their interpretation. And there's lots who I don't, but it very rarely gets in the way of my enjoyment of the book. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you know what? It didn't get in the way of my enjoyment because it was just like some bits of the movie, and I've seen the movies enough times.
But it wasn't like badly tainted and
again,
separate.
He's an amazing, and I wish Andy Serkis would do more audiobook narration because he's like, it turns out, someone who's like an amazing actor. Yeah. And I do think like Andy Serkis is one of those actors who is like kind of like a generational talent, but is underappreciated because he's always wearing like a CGI suit, you know. Like
you always see him in these skimpy.
Yeah, and he's like playing, you know, he's in the what is it, the Planet of the Apes, and he's King Kong, and he's done so much stuff in this, you know, and he's like changed how Hollywood works and sort of like changed how motion capture and performance capture. He became the replaced face of an entire style of like the Hollywood and movie history changing technology.
Yeah,
where this is made and then they're like, you know, James Cameron is like, oh, Avatar is possible now. Like, all of that stuff going
foundational.
On. Foundational performance by an amazing actor.
Yeah. I think one extra thing that kind of makes him very special is not all actors can actually do this much voice acting.
Yeah.
You know, lots of really great actors or actresses, they have one voice.
Yeah,
and that's
Sean Bean. Let's talk about this. Sean Bean turns up in the movie and is like, "All right, no, what is it? No, I'm getting him mixed up." So he's Yorkshire, in the movie because Sean Bean is like from Sheffield. So Sean Bean turns up. Every single role he plays, he's from Yorkshire, and he turns up and he's Boromir, and he's from Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Now this presents a challenge to the accents in the book because the different actors in there they play different roles.
Yes.
And a lot of them are just playing, they're just having their own accents. Yeah. Some of them don't.
Scottish, whatever.
Scottish. So here's Gimli, played by a Scottish actor or playing with a Scottish accent. But also Pippin has a Scottish accent.
Yeah.
Frodo has got like a very neutral accent because he's like, he's just doing his like, you know, young person, stage actor voice.
Yeah.
So it's not a very strong English accent or, you know, he's very neutral.
Yeah.
But then Sam and Mary have got like a, you know, West Country accent, mm-hmm. like they're from Somerset or whatever.
Okay.
And but then another friend, like the Took, Pippin or whatever, which would, again, now I'm saying this, I can't remember which one, has got a Scottish accent, but then dwarves are Scottish. So the other dwarves that could turn up, are all of those going to be Scottish? Now, in the Silmarillion, sometimes, but, you know, because Andy Serkis also did there. So it's like dwarves are Scottish, but also some hobbits are Scottish. But then the rangers from the north are kind of like, well-spoken, you know, like just this person could be doing Shakespeare or whatever.
Right.
But then because Sean Bean is like northern, he's got like a northern English accent, when they get down to where he's from, he's a prince from Minas Tirith, he's a prince of Gondor.
Yeah.
Not a prince, he's like whatever, you know, son of the stewards or whatever.
Yeah.
He's a prince.
Yeah.
But then when you get down there, you're like, well, what accent does his brother have? Or what accent do the guards have there? Yeah. And suddenly these other northern
England...
Yeah, you
need to more think like in groups of people from the same region, they should have the same accent,
yeah,
right?
Shouldn't they have the same accent?
Yeah.
But not really, because then there's like a Brummie accent and a liver. So this Gondor, which is meant to be the beacon of great city, is like suddenly they're like the northern English accents.
Right.
And then like the well-spoken people have got like the, you know, more of the upper class, or like, you know, like the more RP received pronunciation, Queen's English. They're like some other kings.
Okay.
You know, and that's very much elves, you know, they are very well, they speak gently and slowly as though they have all the time in the world, because they do, because they're immortal.
They are. Yeah.
But then all the orcs are just cockney. They're just all like, because in the movie, they're like, all right. And so Andy Serkis is doing the like this weird mix of accents, like these regional accents from Great Britain, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Some Scotland, some Yorkshire, some, you know, West Country, some Cockney. And it's sort of, and I was like, oh, right, this is like a challenge for me, for me personally, because I never thought that Gondor could be represented by...
Northern
people, because I'm like, no, the Dunedai, they're from the north, you know. So in my head, the accent choices that I would take wouldn't have given you know, dwarves the Scottish accent.
Right.
It works because, you know, Gimli he's the only dwarf who turns up in either thing. So I'm like, oh, that's just that dwarf's accent.
Okay.
For me, a dwarf would be, you know, like
Welsh?
Yeah, maybe Welsh or maybe in the other direction, because Welsh is more Celtic, so that's more Welsh would be the elves would be Welsh.
Okay.
But like dwarves are like mountainous people, and I'd be like, yeah, they're from like Norway, or, you know, they'd be like Nordic or more like Icelandic. So I was, you know, so but because he's taking the accents from the movie, all of the accents are like different regional accents within the UK,
okay,
rather than
not
world
broader European or whatever, anything that else,
which makes things
inspired.
Less problematic in terms of racism kind of thing, but kind of more problematic in the fact that like all of the main characters
more
are
classism.
Like classism. My own ingrained English British classism got in the way,
right?
That because I'm like, no, now it's not Sean Bean, the amazing actor, like the, you know, the prolific and great actor who's always Yorkshire. Like we even watched that Death of Stalin, and he's like the Russian in charge of the army, and he turns up halfway through, and he's just Yorkshire. And I was like, oh, okay, okay, makes sense. Like where he's from outside, like Moscow or something, so it's fine. Right. That, like the head of the Russian army turns up, Molotov, isn't he? Anyway.
I have no recollection of what you're talking about.
Either way,
right,
I'm
now
just saying Sean Bean. It's fine that he's Yorkshire and everyone, but Sean Bean's casting choice in the movie kind of infected like my understanding of what's going on. I'm like, no, Gondor is like those should be the southern people, because that's like down in the doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So my final note in this: Andy Serkis, amazing narrator, really fun accents, really enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah,
it puts great spins on it. Describes, you know, fight scenes and battles and tender moments. He's got really good range.
Yes.
What he doesn't have is range vocally in octaves. He
right.
has got a 0.3 octave range in his singing voice. And unfortunately, there is quite a lot of singing.
Oh, no,
in
really?
There is a lot of... Here's the thing. My original reading of Lord of the Rings...
Yeah.
was that you get to a place and there's poetry. So I always thought this is poetry. So when I got to those parts, I would read it in my I'm now reading poetry voice.
Like in a rhythmic kind of narration.
Well, just, I don't know. Let me, like, maybe let's just find something. From Lord of the Rings. What, let me find one here. The Lay of Lethian or something like that. Poems in Lord of the Rings. Can I just... So the road goes forever on. Roads go ever, ever on, over rock and under tree, by caves where never sun has shone, by streams that never find the sea, over snow by winter sown, and through the merry flowers of June, over grass and over stone, and under mountains in the moon. Like, yeah. I can pass that because that is written and I can see where I'm going to break because when you read poetry... It's all there.
It's visually
laid out in a way which helps you understand it.
Yeah, and also it uses the melody of the language that you get into.
The language informs the melody. Yeah. And when I say, and under mountains in the moon, I'm like, dun, 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 yes. dun, dun, dun.
Exactly.
Like, it's not a melody, but it's a rhythm that I decide as the person reading the text.
Yeah.
Andy Serkis is so bad at singing, but the audiobook producer is like, these are songs, give them notes. And all he does is he noodles around the pentatonic scale, one note per every new word or every new beat has a new note, and it goes either up one, down two, up one, down one. Like, so it's all like... pentatonic scale, like nothing complex, nothing in, like, and it is awful.
Right.
Honestly, Andy Serkis's singing by itself knocks this audiobook narration from 5 stars down to 4.5 stars. Like, my entire reading experience of this could have been it wouldn't have been 5 stars, but it could have, if it had been 5 stars,
right,
there's no way that I could have said this audiobook is a 5-star audiobook listening, like book listening experience. 100% due to Andy Serkis's singing.
Okay.
I know he would be able to read poetry better than I could.
Yeah. If he just reads it.
Every single time he started singing, it was so aggravating and so annoying. I would pause the audiobook, skip forward until it finished, and I wouldn't even skip back to make sure I didn't miss the next few lines. I'd be like, fuck it. I can't go back and listen to even... I'm going to miss 25 seconds of audiobook, the actual next part of this, to not listen to 5 seconds of him doing. And then what I'd do, so I'd go and look up this poetry, because again, there's this page here, which is like every poem, every bit
so
there as well.
Go back and read it so you did get the content.
Yeah. Or I would go onto YouTube if I was doing something and I didn't want to read it right then. I would go onto YouTube and find somebody else who can sing, can play musical. And it's sometimes it was okay when it was like he was doing a bit with like just poetry in front. But nowhere did ever Tolkien write down which melody should go where.
No.
And even if he did, the person singing should be able to sing as well as the character in the book. And I can believe that Sam isn't very good at singing.
Yeah.
And I can believe that maybe, I don't know, to be racist, the dwarf isn't that good at singing. Again, that's me being completely, I wouldn't say racist, but like, I don't know what it is. But like, singing is such a massive part of this book.
Yeah.
And knowing the Silmarillion, at the start of the Silmarillion, literally creation is sung into existence. Singing isn't a minor point of this. But again, when I read this, they weren't songs, they were poems. Like, yes. I read them, I got the text of them into my head via poetry, not via song. Even though the characters in the book are singing, I needed to go to YouTube and listen to other people singing these songs, which I knew were going to be the longer ones. Otherwise, if I knew they were going to be the short ones, I would just go, you know, go through this as well.
Yeah, makes sense.
Because... holy shit, Andy Serkis. And I'm not kidding you. Andy Serkis is so bad at singing
Right.
He is so bad. I can't get over how bad he is at singing.
I need a taste after the podcast.
This podcast.
You
but
can
literally,
give me a
when he goes like this, but it can be really bad because it'll be like, oh, this isn't, you know, this is now, you know, some dwarf is singing. And then Galadriel's song, and you'd be like, Galadriel, who is like the most beautiful woman. She's like half elf, half
ephemeral
goddess, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
she's
yeah.
like super angelic. And there's Andy Serkis going, let me just click on it here as well. And he'll be like, I sang of leaves of gold, and leaves of gold there grew. Of wind I sang, a wind there came, and in the branches blew. Beyond the sun, beyond the moon, the foam was on the sea. And by the strand of Ilmarin, there grew a golden tree.
Okay, that's enough. Beneath that's enough.
And it's just the same melody over and over again. I'm like, no, that's not how songs work. It's not just the same two lines with the same melody repeated on and on. And you just skip forward and you skip forward. And like 3 minutes later, he's yeah. still going, but if of ships I now should sing, what ship would come to me? And I'm like, that's not Galadriel.
No.
Galadriel is, that is not the voice that's in my head. That's not the voice that's in your head. Because Andy Serkis doesn't have the capability of singing. Anyway, now I just thought, hey, let's go to the Fellowship of the Rings book here.
Oh
see
God.
If anyone else mentions this.
Andy Serkis singing.
Yeah, I was just wondering. Everyone gives it 5 stars here as well. Everyone's saying, Andy Serkis knocks it out of the park. No, he does. And it's so good as well. But like, yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, these are all... I was wondering if anyone else is going to be... Great reading. Bad singing. This is from 2 years ago. Please, Andy, don't sing. It makes my ears bleed. Apart from that, it was very well read. Yes!
Yes.
That's it. 5 stars for the story. 4 nice. Stars for the performance. That's my rating as well. Andy, please don't sing. Mm. Please, Andy, don't sing.
Mm.
Anyway, so there. I've got through the first half of my notes for this episode that I want to do. And we're 36 minutes in. Hey, this could be pretty good.
Yeah.
Got lots of... I know that you're not saying much, but I've got lots of notes to
I know you've
here.
Got lots of things to say. I'm just here for the ride.
So, the last episode that we did was the Silmarillion.
Yes.
I was like, I'm looking forward to listening to a podcast, which is a very good podcast, a new podcast. It's only been running for 6 months or so, called A Meal of Thorns.
Right.
And it's like, it's people who are critics... not so much authors or not so much reviewers, it's more criticism or talking about criticism of books, mostly like speculative fiction, so fantasy, science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And each person brings a book there as well. And one guy brought the Silmarillion, and I listened to the first like 5 or 6 minutes of that podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, I intend to read the Silmarillion. Like it's. I'm already
it's
reading.
Here,
yeah,
on
I'm
the
already
table.
Started
yeah,
Lord
yeah,
of the
yeah.
Rings. I'm gonna. So I won't listen to that more of that podcast until I listen to it, and I actually waited until after we recorded our podcast about it.
Right.
And then listen to their podcast. Kind of annoying that we like touch on numerous similar points.
Why is that annoying?
Well, it's not annoying. It's sort
it just
of like,
proves
oh,
the
I
points.
Wish I'd have heard him say that because then I would have phrased my thing that I wanted to say in a different way.
Yeah, but it's
we both mentioned
authentic.
On that podcast, they also mentioned the tree, that there's like the tree has got a genealogy.
Yeah.
And like the genealogy of this white tree is as important as the genealogy of some humans as well. But one thing that they mentioned was that they said the movie hangs heavy over any discussion. They're like, let's get the movie out of the way. I'm not going to try and do that now here. Let's get this out of the way. My opinion on the movies. Because I said before, if 10 people email me or 10 people message me, we'll do an episode about the movies.
Yes.
And we had
did?
Four. No, I think it was like, did I say like 4 people?
Yeah.
3 or 4 people?
It wasn't any more.
It wasn't 10 people. But
okay.
So here's my potted review of the movie.
Okay, now we intersect with, now it's about the movies.
Yeah, yeah. But one of the things that they mentioned, I just want to mention that I listened to this Meal of Thorns episode because there's some other points that I want to bring out in
okay.
a minute. But one thing that they talk about is like the movie hangs heavy over this. It's sort of like a way that it closes off other people's imagination
yes.
of Lord of the Rings by when they picture something, it's like filtered through the movie. And that's what I was trying to not have
yeah.
in this and failed in some ways, yeah. but like I did recapture some of my imagination from 14, 15 year old Luke
okay.
reading about it.
Yes, because you did in the past have this experience,
yeah.
not filtered through the movies.
And also, yeah. I have, when I rewatch the movies, I remember what I thought when I first watched the movies and thought, hey, that's a good change from the book. That's not a good change from the book.
Yes.
And they were saying that they love the movies or thought they were good movies. Here's my thing. There's like 1.5 good movies out of the 3 Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
I think the first movie is amazing. The Fellowship of the Rings is an all-time great fantasy movie. Probably one of the best fantasy movies ever captured to film.
Yeah.
Because they put in so much effort into all the details. They had they spent years preparing to make one movie.
Yeah.
And that movie was The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Sorry, that movie was The Fellowship of the Rings.
Yes.
And it was super focused. At any one time, there's one thing happening. Like, it's like, here is the story.
It's just a full story. It's the full thing. It makes so much sense.
Yeah. And it's really good. They spent all of the energy. And you watched back through, you watched all of the...
the making of
didn't you?
The details and the thought and the precision and the love that went in that is
and the sense of scale as
crazy.
Well. Like there's the you know some Gandalf is here and there's hobbits here and the dwarf is this size and the humans and the creativity
of
filmmaking was amazing. It was like loads of practical stuff and all of the
clothes, the arms.
Yeah, but also then the CGI stuff. They're like, oh, this was actually a fully CG character running across this bridge in the Mines of Moria. Mm. And then other parts were like, well, that was a CG character, but the rest of it was a like a miniature.
Yeah.
And then this was a set. And then this was like, they had the new 3D trackers on the camera. Mm-hmm. And so they, like everything, there was so amazing. They'd put so much effort into new technologies, new techniques, into all that kind of stuff. And that carried through into most of the second movie. And then there's Gollum turns up.
Yeah.
And the second movie is, I think, also very good. And they introduced new technology, the massive engine, which was like the war thing where they could like programmatically have crowds and things and CGI battles.
And make it so that the crowd isn't just one repeated character like the repeated character.
Yeah, it's procedurally generated battle scenes.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah, very
good. And then the third movie is garbage because they were making them back to back to back. And they had, instead of, you know, all this set up. And so much of the third movie is like, ah, fuck it. We'll just put a green screen here. Mm-hmm. And it's just bad. And that's where it, and there it like set, it goes in a different direction and there's a different vibe from the book. More and more and more
has
changed.
And you can feel the time pressure.
Yeah. You can, and it's, that's it. If they'd have put the first movie out, put the second movie out and then been like, the next movie isn't coming out next year. Let's wait. Mm. Let's spend 3 years on this last movie. It could have been a masterpiece, but it wasn't. Yeah. They had a year to finish it up. Mm. They had all the actors there. They just had to get it finished. Yeah. And everything about that third movie is massively compromised. They leave so much stuff out. The timing is all over the place. The ride, the action doesn't work out. And they're like, you know, people complain about how many endings it has. There's like 5 different endings to it. And I'm like, yeah, but in the book, those things happened. But it wasn't an ending. There's like a whole hour-long chapter in the audiobook, which is just various goodbyes. And it's all these characters saying, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. But I'm like, yeah, but I know that there's still like 4 loose ends to wrap up. Like, what's going to go on with this character? Where's Gandalf going to go? Saruman's still out there with Wormtongue.
Yeah.
I know there's going to be a scouring of the Shire. There's going to be raising of the Shire, scouring, or whatever it's going to be. Like, I know that there's a lot more to come. Mm. You know, we still got to pay off. We still got to, you know, wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
And we still got to see off these characters. And in the book there's still drama to that. There's payoff and drama.
Yeah, and there's still story to lead to that end.
And in the movie they're like, well, we spent a long time with these characters. I bet you want to see them each meet each other one more time. And these people get married and these people get married and these people. I was like, we don't care about these people getting married because that was never the focus. And in the book it goes very much down to like, right, here are the hobbits. Here is the hobbits' experience of this.
Yeah.
And in the movie it's sort of like, well, we just got to spend another half an hour saying goodbye. And I'm like, yeah, but without the scouring of the... And it's so, like, the third movie is so bad, it kind of sours my, like, when we watched the trilogy, of course, I wasn't going to be like, oh, let's not watch this. But I was thinking, let's not watch the extended cut, because then Saruman isn't killed by falling on a spiky thing after being shot. And, like, none of the geometry of that works out, of that thing. They're on the top of the Orthanc Tower in Isengard, and I'm like, just, that, in the book... Saruman is like the last one defeated, and it's he's by that point his powers have been taken away,
yeah.
and he's so useless that a group of hobbits can kill him, and he's killed by his own, like, can defeat him, and he's killed by his own henchmen. That's yeah. the point of him.
Yeah.
And yeah, all
it makes
of the,
so much more sense.
All of the philosophy, not the philosophy, but like, what is the thrust of the book, of that third book, which we'll get onto when we do an episode about it. But like, in the movie, it's set out. So that's all I would have said if I did an episode about the Lord of the Rings movie. I'd have talked a lot about the movie making and what I enjoy about the behind the scenes stuff. But so much of it would be just be like, the first movie amazing,
yeah.
second movie is good,
yeah.
third movie is a disaster, and it kind of sours the taste of the first two movies for me.
Yeah. To be honest,
yeah.
I went through and watched, because everything like the everything in, even now, if you stream the movies and if you stream the extended edition with all the extra bits, it's all set out in the layout of the DVD box, right? Mm. So the making of is like the making of the first movie, the making of the second, and then the third. And in the making of, you can get this this feel to it, because in the beginnings, like, it was yeah. all like really everybody was so enthusiastic and yeah. really into it, and at the end in the last bit everybody was tired and there were more tension, and they yeah. in the making of the third movie they were also talking about literal like falling out of people, yeah. like big dramas, big things. Of course, there were also some, you know...
Because they'd lived together for like four yeah, years by that yeah. point.
And of course, then there's going to be conflict and stuff. And they were honest in the making ofs.
Yeah.
And I think they knew that. And I think it was very apparent that this was such a massive undertaking that it was so difficult to wrap up in a way that satisfied and held up to that level. It was just wasn't possible.
Yeah.
With the, you know, they set off with the first movie, had this high standard for everything.
Yeah.
And then it was like so big and
the second movie captures some of the highs of the first movie.
Yeah.
It's let down in other ways, but again, it's just creative decisions at yes. that point. I don't have an issue with them because you've got to do something,
yeah.
Which I'll have issues with. And the battle. Oh, also, they talked about on the Meal of Thorns podcast battles, and I want to talk about battles, but let's do that in the next episode
because
we can talk about yes. sieges, fights versus battles versus sieges. That'll be a whole topic I'll go into.
Okay.
So anyway, let's get away from the movies now and yeah. talk about some of the writing stuff in this, because again, I've talked about the poetry.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the poetry, except when Andy Serkis sings it. So I started reading Brandon Sanderson's latest doorstep novel.
Right.
Brandon's the latest Way of Kings, okay. whatever it is.
Light Archive.
Stormlight Archive. And I started reading it. It was so bad. And I was like, oh, right. Yes, this should have been just a trilogy and then move on. Mm. He's like, no, it's going to be five books. And I'm like, you can't sustain quality for five doorstep novels.
It's really difficult.
And also that one book was as long as like all of these Lord of the Rings books put together.
Oh, really?
I don't know. These are like 20 hours each. What is it here? Sort of like, it doesn't say the time on these ones. Either way, each of them about normally it says, oh, over here, 22 hours. So, but
the,
that was
the
like
Fellowship of the Rings.
Yeah, there was one book. So okay. each of them are like 20 hours worth of audiobook to yeah. go into it. So perfectly fine. There's one Brandon Sanderson. So I started off, got like a chapter in, and I was like, this is garbage. Because also, he doesn't, like the viewpoint characters don't know which world they're in. And it's not clear that when they say stuff. So we watched a video earlier about this computer game called Blueprints.
Mm.
Like a prince who is blue.
Mm.
Like, you know, a king, a queen, a princess, and a prince are blue. But also it's a pun on blueprints, as in like
yep.
plans.
Architectural plans.
In yep. this case, architectural plans. In this Brandon Sanderson novel, they're saying, oh, what about the blueprint of the... I didn't do a podcast about this because I only got a few chapters yeah. in. Asked for the audio, the Audible credit back.
Yeah.
But in my little review on Goodreads.
Goodreads,
I mentioned how him using the word... Him having one of the characters use the word blueprint ruined it for me, or was one of the many things that ruined it for me, because I was like, no, you can't have blueprints in a fantasy novel because blueprints are for some like chemical process that if you
it's for copying.
Yeah, but the original version isn't blue. Like, you don't make a blueprint, you do something, and then each one of the copies is a blue is like the blueprint. Yes. It's like a negative of it, isn't it? A negative. Either way. Because it's like blue with white lines on it.
Yeah, the outline is what you copied from the first thing.
But the person doesn't like scrape away the white or doesn't like draw in white on blue. So I was like, blue. And there's so many other words that you can use for a blueprint for a spell, like to do magic. So I'm like, we don't call it a blueprint. We call it a spell or a recipe or like there's so many other words that the character in the book could have used except blueprint, like plan or scheme or whatever it would be. But blueprint is so based on like a chemical, like a human, our human world chemical copying process.
It has a very specific meaning our world.
So it's blueprint. And I was like, him having one of the characters use blueprint is made me stop reading the book, among other things. But also I had no hope in this. I was like, that's just not how you do. You can't just have an anachronism in there like that, and that means something out of time,
right?
You know, like an anachronism is like why is somebody in the 1930s, why do they have an iPhone? It's like, well, it wasn't an iPhone, it was like a I can't remember what they, you know, you see these things like are they a time traveler? It's like, no, that was just like a device. It was a hearing aid, but back then hearing aids were big and chunky. So when you hold it next to it, it looks like they're using an iPhone. But it isn't. In the beginning, in the like the first chapter of Lord of the Rings, they're talking about this fireworks display, Gandalf's magical fireworks display.
Yes.
And, like, this one firework was a big dragon and it came over them or rumbled over them with so much power and speed. It's like an express train. And I was like, an express train? And it like threw me for a loop and I was like, wait, I don't remember.
Wait, that's now in the Lord of...
Yes, again. And I was like, how is there an express train? There isn't a single other time in the Lord of the Rings, as from my memory, that he ever has anything which references like the modern Industrial Revolution, except by analogy, where like this, you know, when they get to, you know, Isengard and it's all like
as machines.
Yeah, there's like the machines stuff. And steam machines and the imagery of other places is like very like post-industrial or. Yeah. You know, like there's slag heaps and mining and all this other kind of stuff. But then there's an express train and he mentions it and then he moves on. And I made a note of it and I was like, wait, that's a bit, you know, that's a bit of an anachronism. Is that the way you pronounce it? Anachronism, yeah. But then, of course, you got to remember that this is a book which is discovered and then translated into English. This is an English translation of the Book of Westmarch, Red Book of Westmarch.
Okay. Oh, okay. So
and I'm like, okay, it wasn't a character saying express. But here's the thing. Brandon Sanderson would have had one of the characters saying that's like an express train. I'm like, no, you're in a medieval fantasy world.
It wasn't the narrator saying
It was the narrator saying this is like an express train. But then I'm like, but why wasn't it like a full horse-drawn carriage, you know, like, but no, an express train. So anyway, that popped out to me and... just a small thing, but I was like, oh, that's interesting that I'd like given up on a Brandon Sanderson book for this kind of reason. And I'm going to give Tolkien a pass. But again, it only happened once. And I was like, I trust him enough.
I think there is a difference if the narrator does say stuff like that, especially if this is literally...
A book within a book that's translated.
Exactly, yeah.
So
there's meta bits in that justify that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so moving on. I was going to say Merry and Pippin don't come along by accident. Oh, yeah, that's the difference between the movie and the book. In the movie, they're like, they just bump into them on the way out the Shire and they're like, come along. And they're like, okay, go along. But in the book, it's very much like, no, they all were looking at Frodo going, he's going to leave. He's going to do a Bilbo and leave for a while. We should go along with him.
Yeah, yeah, we want an adventure.
And there's a whole chapter called A Conspiracy Revealed. And you're like, oh, what's the conspiracy? It's like, yeah, Merry and Pippin and Sam were like playing Frodo the whole time. They knew that they were going to go on an adventure. And of course, they were going to come along with it. Yeah. So that's just one of the reasons why I like that. That was always in my head in the book as well, that when they just randomly come along on an adventure, I was like, no, that was very intentional in the book.
Yeah.
And the hobbits are much more clever in the book, and in the movie, they're much more like buffoons and comedy characters, which works great for the movie. But it's difficult to have your viewpoint characters be stupid and buffoons. It's much more to have them sort of like, you know, determined and making decisions and making mistakes, but also deciding what to do as well.
Right.
They got to Tom Bombadil, not in the movie.
No, there's no Tom Bombadil.
And this was the worst part of the whole book for me.
Yeah.
Because Tom Bombadil speaks in metered rhyming meters, which meant that the audiobook producer said to
Andy Serkis,
everything that Tom Bombadil says has to be sung.
Oh, no.
It was...
Again.
So bad. So bad. But it wasn't just a disconnected poetry. It was actually conversations within it.
You couldn't just skip.
Let's come back to it.
It wasn't a full thing, like, with an end and a beginning. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is him. Hey, doll, merry doll, ring-a-ding-a-loo-doo, ring-a-dong, hop-along, fal-fallow the willow, tum-bum, jolly tom, tum-bum-ba-dee-lo. And this is Andy Serkis in my head. And it just carries on. Hey, come, merry doll, dairy doll, my darling, airlight goes with it. And I'm like, fucking hell. And I mentioned in the previous podcast about the Silmarillion that, yes, I wish
Tom Bombadil
was edited out the book.
Yeah. And so he appears again in The Lord of the Rings.
He's not in a Silmarillion. He's only in The Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
but
right.
Remember, this is in part one of the book, and I already read it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
When we did
now,
that.
It's a bit confusing, you must say.
The guys
that.
on the Meal of Thorns podcast talking about, they were like, yeah, it should have been edited out, not just of the movie. It should be edited out the book. It adds nothing to the book.
Right.
And it's like confusing plot wise. It like messes things up.
And what is he? Hobbit?
No, he's not a hobbit. He's like a god figure. Like, he's never explained, but he's obviously one of the Maiar and Valar, you know, he's higher level than even Gandalf. Like, he picks up the ring and just flicks the ring as like, and he makes it disappear and like picks it out of Frodo's ear, puts it on, doesn't do anything. Frodo puts on the ring, Tom Bombadil can see him. It's just sort of like, oh yeah, there's just like more powerful stuff in the world than the rings. And I'm like, but the ring is meant to be like the most dangerous, most powerful thing. And then they have someone who's so powerful that he can just do it. And then in the Council of Elrond, they're like, oh yeah, they should, maybe we should give it to Tom Bombadil to look after. He can keep it safe. Nobody else will find it if he's got it. And they're like, no, we can't. And then, you know, they come up with some like bullshit reasoning why Tom Bombadil shouldn't do it. But apparently he was like an existing character of Tolkien's. He'd been mentioned in poems before, whatever.
Okay.
And so he was included in this book, and it should have been edited out. And that's what they said on the Meal of Thorns podcast. They already said that. I'd already mentioned that he should have been edited out. And I'd even named the editor. Christopher Tolkien should have edited Lord of the Rings. As soon as his dad died, he's like, right, let's do a proper edit of this.
Let's do the new publishing.
We're going to, like, third edition.
Yeah.
Christopher Tolkien edits out Tom. If all he did was edit Tom Bombadil out of Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Rings, way better. Like, better balanced. And if he did leave Tom Bombadil in, he could have tied him back to, like, something from the Silmarillion that Christopher Tolkien knew about, but the world didn't know about at that point.
Yeah.
Anyway, Christopher Tolkien, as our, you know, Bilbo / Frodo / Samwise, like, who's writing the Red Book of Red March, they should have just removed him. They could have fallen into the barrow and got the swords another way. They didn't have to sing a song for Tom Bombadil to come and save them. They use it, like, in the next chapter and then never again for the rest of the time. Like, they have a magical man who's more powerful than Saruman and the Ring, who can get them out of any situation. Why did they never sing the song to bring back Tom Bombadil ever again?
He was so annoying that I didn't want to.
Yes, maybe it's because he was so bad at singing. Goldberry, Goldberry,
no,
Mary,
no, stop it. Stop it. People will just have to like close their ears after all this.
So anyway, at this point, I pause to read the Silmarillion and I come back.
Yeah.
So let's wrap it up now with the final thing that I want to talk about on the final reply that I wanted to give to the Meal of Thorns podcast.
Yeah.
Which is, one of them goes... can't remember the names of the guys on the episode. There's always one guy, but I can't remember who said it. Sort of like, I made a note. What even are elves?
Okay. What even are they?
What even are elves? Because this is what the Silmarillion is like. You know, two-thirds of the Silmarillion is just about what the elves are doing. The Noldor and the Thingor and the, you know, these other people.
Okay.
What even are elves? And I was like, ah, yeah, good point. They also, really great thing, is sort of like, in the movie, they gave the elves pointy ears. A pointy ear is sort of like, sent me down like a 6-hour, you know, Wikipedia hole of like, why are elves depicted with pointy ears? Because they're not...
Fairies?
They're not... Well, here,
it's like this the connection, because people think like elves are fairy like.
Kind of, I guess. Kind of. Look, I'm not going to get into it, and I don't know what other people's things are. The point is, in the movie, they've got to be able to show with human actors that someone isn't a human.
Yes,
you can do that really well with dwarves and hobbits. Different height, furry feet,
more
stuff
hair,
on the feet, yeah,
less
like,
hair,
yeah, bigger beards, more beards. Now, when you get to elves, you're like, is Boromir well, he's kind of a bit scraggly, but like Faramir turns up. You're like, he's kind of like highborn, or, you know, these some of these princes. You're like, how do we immediately say that anybody looking at this person knows that they're not human and that they are elf? Mm. Pointy ears, great. Like long blonde hair, pointy ears, which is like super more racist than it needs to be.
Yeah.
That the higher, and they even use this terminology all the time in the book, that highborn means closer to elves.
Mm-hmm.
Because elves have within them, and this goes back to my reading of the Silmarillion, is that the elves were immortal and that they were created like three ages before men, or like around before men. And men have the gift of mortality, that they can die, and that they're always being replenished and they're always like changing and moving.
And it's called a gift.
Oh, no, it super is a gift. Even though, you know, like that CGP Grey video, which I'm saying, like, gift, they give them the scare quotes, gift of mortality.
Yeah.
No, I'm totally with it that mortality in this case is a gift.
Yeah.
Because the elves, like, really good when their backs are up against the wall. When their backs aren't personally up against the wall, don't give a shit.
Yeah.
So here's, and it's because the closer you are to having lived with the trees and the lights and the beacons rather than under the sun and the moon, like the closer you have ever been to this light, which is Galadriel is right there. They give Frodo a gift, which is a light, like some light in a vial and things like that. But all elves have this in them. They are all they are all full of this starlight / moonlight / sunlight.
Right.
And it's really there. Like, it's so much there.
Like taking enlightenment literally.
Yeah, it's like, so here's the thing. If you want to talk about like the divine right of kings, which we might talk about more in the next episode when we talk about kings or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, what if there is a divine right of kings? Like where a king, there is actually something special about them.
Mm.
Which is like, not just like they happen to have the right father or whatever, but there's literally something in their bloodline, literally, which makes them live longer, makes them wiser, makes them stronger, makes them be able to heal people, makes them be able to see in the dark, makes them glow at night, you know, all of these different things. What if there actually was something in them which is visible to other people around them? And that's what's happening in the book. Unfortunately, in the movie, they were like, well, if they're blonde and have got white skin, they're highborn. And if they're like, you know, if they haven't shaved and they're a bit scraggly and they've got like darker hair that and whatever, you know, they've got an accent, it means they're lower. So here's the thing. There's no reason that all the elves have to have like long blonde hair and pointy ears.
Yeah.
Because in the book, just on the face of them, you just look at them and go, they have something about them.
Mm-hmm.
They exist in two planes at once. They exist in our world.
Yeah.
They also exist in like a spiritual plane at the same time.
Right.
When Frodo puts on the ring, everything around him gets very, well, it's kind of very well done in the movie. Everything around him gets all fuzzy and blurry.
Yeah.
Except some people don't. And the people who don't have got like this light within them.
Mm.
And in the book, it's very clear that he puts on the rings and this, in the movie, they had Arwen turn up on a horse, pick him up, rescue him and run away.
Yeah.
In the book, it's not Arwen. Actually, it's pretty good. Glorfindel, who is his name means blonde or golden haired.
Right.
Here's the thing. If all elves are blonde or have golden hair, you couldn't call one guy blonde golden haired elf.
Yes, that's true.
So the book isn't like the elves have all got pointy ear and long white hair and are like super like Caucasian.
Yeah.
It's sort of like they're just people. But if you put the ring on, they are glowing brightly. Glorfindel is like this ancient warrior who grew up when there was still the tree with the light in the world.
He's immortal, really, really old.
He is containing this light of creation.
Yes.
This light of this starlight, sunlight, moonlight in him.
Yeah.
Frodo puts on the ring. Everybody else goes all fuzzy and dark, and he glows like a beacon. And he's not like a special elf.
Mm.
All elves would be this way.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like the one time that Frodo puts on a ring where an elf is next to him. He's like, holy shit, this elf is glowing.
Mm.
Other people see elfin glowing stuff in other people, like in the elves.
Yeah.
It's not like you need pointy ears
to
signify. In the movie, they use pointy ears and blondness to signify elf.
Yeah.
but you wouldn't need that. But then you'd have to have like special effects on them. You'd like Legolas would have to be glowing the entire time.
Which that, now they could do.
Yeah, now it would be then, possible. But it's like the whole Star Trek thing, sort of like, oh, we just like put some wrinkles on the foreheads and Spock has pointy ears. Like, yeah, pointy ears for Spock because it was easier to give him pointy ears than to constantly do forehead makeup. You know, once they got better at forehead makeup.
Practical effects are quite...
So what even are elves? Elves are immortal beings, and this is my analogy, is that they are cats. They are house cats.
Mm.
So the Valar, which are like the demigods, mm-hmm. each... Oh, no, no. In this case, it was the, like, the...
The other ones.
The El... I was going to say Elohim, but that's like more...
I got this far in the Silmarillion.
Yeah, yeah. So the Ainur, whatever. Again, I don't have the right Wikipedia page here, although the Silmarillion Wikipedia page.
Yeah. This is all explained in the first book in the Silmarillion, isn't it? That like how things are.
And here's the thing. They were like, hey, I'm going to make two people, one mortal and one immortal. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make men. And I'm going to make elves, elf kind, and mankind.
Mm-hmm.
And other people were like, hey, I'm going to make some tree people, and I'm going to make some dwarf people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some other people, I'm going to make some dolphin people, and I'm going to make some eagle people.
Yeah.
Dolphin people might be me reading in between the lines of things. but the point is that if you have people, if you have, like, so you have something which they're, like, godlike, like, not angelic, because that would be the Maiar. That's, like, the next level down. That's, like, you know, Gandalf, Saruman, Sauron, the, you know, Tom Bombadil, although he's probably a bit higher up. Mm-hmm. But you get these other people who are, like, these middle angels.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get, like, the demigods and at the top the gods. So anyway, here's the god saying, I need some children who are going to live on Earth and who are going to be companions. You know, there's references, like, in this. Like, the theology or mythology of Lord of the Rings and Silmarillion is all... You know, you can find influences from Christianity and Greek all this kind of stuff.
Yes.
But what in the end, elves are self-centered, selfish. They do care about other things. But here's the thing. If you're immortal and you can live forever and you were created to live forever and you were created just to be magically well the whole time and magically not need food or maybe need food or just exist on light or just create light and you live there and, you know, you got this, some of them have rings and some of them don't have rings and there's light around and you know that any time you can just leave on a boat and sail over to, you know, sail away from the Grey Havens and go and live literally next to God. You can just retire to Mount Olympus. You can, that's the kind of thing that you can do. It's not available to anyone, but that's what you can do. You're very much like a domesticated house cat who might care about other things, but generally just wants to be left alone and
do what they want to do.
Yeah, do whatever they want to do. Mm. That's kind of maybe why they have pointy ears. I don't know. But it's just one of those things. I was like that. Then I was like, yeah. And then like the opposite of elves, which are like the orcs, they are like dogs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because literally in the book, they're bred for different purposes.
Yeah.
You get big ones, which are bred for fighting, you know, whatever those fighting pit bulls, Dobermans, whatever it is. And then you get other ones which are used for tracking. Mm. There's orc characters turns up and these are smaller ones which aren't good at fighting and weaker, but they've got a good nose and they can sniff out Frodo and Sam. They're like, I sniffed his cloak and now I'm gonna go and find him.
Yeah.
And so I was like, and that's kind of what you have. And then humans are like, I wouldn't say in a mix between, because they are a separate thing, but like, yeah, humans are the ones who get shit done, especially in the Silmarillion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned this before. When a dragon steals a jewel and stuff, all the elves are like, well, we just got to wait. It'll be too dangerous to go up there. And I'm like, yeah, of course you're going to think that, because there's only one kind of elf, which are actually going out and doing stuff. And when they actually need shit to go get done, a human turns up and sort of like, yeah, I'll go and fuck up a dragon. And he goes, and I'm like, yeah, like the curse of, or the, you know, what they say, the gift of mortality for humans is that, well, they just like YOLO into battle. They like YOLO up against Sauron. They YOLO here and YOLO there.
Yeah.
And the men, the humans who are classed as the most disappointing and the easiest ones to corrupt are the ones with the most power, which have the longest lives. Mm-hmm. The ones who are, you know, 1/16th elvish or from the line, you know, these the Numenor people.
Right.
who is well described in the appendices and other things as well. Which is what Aragorn is as well. He's like one of his lines.
Yeah.
He can live, like in the movie, they're like, well, how old are you? He's like 80. And you're like, oh, you don't look 80. He's like, yeah, but I've got elf blood in me. And
genes. That's, yeah. Basically,
no, but, no, the thing is, it's not good genes. And this is very specifically, I think I want to like push back about this. This is not racism to talk about the difference between dogs and cats. And it's not racist to say that some dogs are big and some dogs are good at tracking and some dogs are good at herding and some dogs are just like small Yapa dogs who sit on your lap. Like, it's not racist to talk about different kinds of dogs, you know.
That's not what I said.
No,
okay,
but when you say he has good genes, we're talking genetics, and that gets very close to racism. I'm saying in the book, sure, there are there is. I'm not saying that he's not being racist. I'm not saying I'm not saying that when they talk about different people, like he's from here and he's from there, and then these races which are sort of like dark skins and slanty eyes from the south, it's sort of like, can you not say dark skinned and slanty eyes from the south, or whatever, like the Eastlings and the South Runs and stuff. I'm like, okay, there are different races of men mentioned in the book, and that people from the north look like Eskimos and people from the south have got dark skins. Sure, whatever. The idea of being highborn is nothing to do with genetics. It's to do with how much elf you have in them.
Yep.
And how much elf you have in you is not genetic. It's like a different dimension of not race. It's more like species or blessedness. But it's because it's like taking something which is normally in spiritualism, like in religion and being spiritual and this kind of stuff. That's always sort of like, yeah, but what you really mean by God's chosen is like not those guys over here, but us people over here. You know,
right.
What it actually means to be blessed by God is to be in this line or this maybe genetics or culture or religion or worshiping the right God. In The Lord of the Rings, highborn in these ways means how much elf, how much light do you have left over in you by your lineage?
Right.
Of do you is your, you know, 27th great grandfather, was he an elf or not?
Okay, I get that. With my comment, I was more saying like there's nothing that he had an influence on. Okay, that's what I meant.
Yes. Yeah. And also with this, which again is included in the movie and the appendix to The Lord of the Rings, which is Aragorn and Arwen.
Yeah.
Their love thing. Like in the movie, Eowyn, the horse princess, is like, ooh, check him out.
Yeah.
And he's like, I am so far out of your league, it's not even close.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Arwen, Liv Tyler, is so far out of his league.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, oh, right. That's not, I mean, it's kind of explicit in the movie.
It is. I think it is very.
In the main text of the book, it's not. In the appendix of the book, it's super more explicit. I was like, oh, he is like 80 years old to her 23 years old. So, and like just way more out of her league that was never going to happen.
Yeah.
But his real love interest, Arwen, is like, you know, has been alive for thousands of years. And in the book, it's like her doom was to fall in love with him.
Yes.
He was her doom.
Yes.
Because and otherwise
nothing about gift or love or whatever.
Yeah.
Doom.
Even though they're like weirdly related as well.
Because, oh, no, really?
No. Not in an oh, no. Like, again, he is like 58 generations removed from
any sort of inter.
Yeah.
Like,
she's the daughter of Elrond. Elrond's brother, they were both like half elf, half human.
Right.
And Elrond said, and they were given a decision, you can't be half and half. You either have to be mortal.
Right.
Or you can be immortal. But if you're immortal, you have to be an elf.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not mortal, you have to be human. Mm-hmm. So Elrond's brother was like, I'm human. And Elrond was like, I'm elf.
Okay.
And so it's a decision that's kind of enforced upon. You can never be one or the other. You can either be mortal or you can't be mortal. And
yeah, there's nothing in between.
And
like,
if you fall in love with someone, it's sort of like, which realm are you? Are you going to be the weakest elf because you're half human, or are you going to be the most powerful human because you're half elf?
Yeah.
And you've got to make that decision.
Doesn't work.
And the two brothers made opposite decisions there. And so, the line that goes all the way back via the different kings and chieftains and kings on Aragorn's side, when you go back, there's a mismatch of generations there.
Yeah.
So yes, what even are elves? Is they are the house cats of the gods. They are they are selfish, self-centered, unconcerned about anything that happens outside of their forests, outside of their trees, outside of their valleys. Now, they are, it's not that they're unconcerned, but they're just existing on another plane. They're like, doesn't
we
actually...
can, we, like, they're in their mindset, they're thinking, we can sit this out.
Yeah, that's it.
We're going to still be here.
That's it. And that Legolas is going around because he's like, you know, he's got a big bromance slash romance with Gimli. And he's sort of like out there going, yeah, I'm around here and I'm really good at everything and things. So I'm like, yeah, Legolas, what are you even doing over here? He's like, he's in the movie. It's all like, yeah, he's like a prince or something from the Northern Realm. In the book, it's really clear that he's been around for thousands of years. He's thousands of years old.
Yeah.
But he's such a minor character in the book that it doesn't, like, it doesn't even come up. Like, it doesn't, it's not even, nothing is from his point of view. Everything when he's around is always from the point of view of the hobbits, who are just, he's just another guy. He's just another elf who's
right
there.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
He's I like the analogy of the house cats and
yeah.
And the idea of the cats and dogs.
Yeah. And again, that's not for me to say where humans, it's not like, yeah, and humans are wolves. It's like, no, humans are like just, they're off
humans
to the side. Humans are humans,
yeah.
But elves are more like house cats of the gods rather than
and this is
fully
also...
deterministic. No, not deterministic. Like, they don't,
yeah.
There's always so much other stuff going on with them that they can't fully engage with the world.
Yeah. And like, talking about historical meaning of, you know, animals in cultures, if you look at the Egyptians and they have the gods and one of the cat and stuff, so that kind of ties in with the way that other cultures, religions and whatever see these kind of specifics and characteristics
of the cat.
Yes,
a cat is seen as noble.
Yeah.
You know, the elves, you know, when you have the Bond villain, was it Blofeld or something, stroking the cat.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, yeah, there we go.
Like,
Those elves, they're just sitting there going, I'm not the most important person here, but I'm the favorite pet of the most important thing here.
Yeah.
So they can just get along with it.
Yep.
And the humans are like, gods, what? Whatever?
Yeah.
Elves? Yeah, sure, whatever. We've got stuff to fuck up. And they go out and start fucking things up. So... the end of the first book, we meet lots of elves in there. Mounds of Moria. I don't need to go into it because I just want to like talk about these bigger topics here as well.
Yeah.
What even are elves? I think I've thrown my grenade over the wall there of what elves are. Elves are in
pretty
both
good
worlds,
yes,
but they're really only in their own world.
Yeah.
Or that they are in two worlds. They exist in the spiritual world and the human world means they can never really engage in the real world.
Yeah. Makes sense.
At the right level as other parts as well. So, yeah. And then my note here is, does it end or does it just pause until the next book?
Mm.
Does this podcast end or are we just going to now pause until the next book?
Probably the latter.
Right. Let's come back tomorrow and record another podcast.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk about the two towers. So in the next book...
No, one second.
Oh, wait,
Can you go back to your splitting of the six things?
Yeah, that's literally what I was going to do.
Okay.
So today we talked about hobbits.
Yeah.
And the book and the movies as well.
Yeah.
I want to talk more about hobbits at the end when we get to book six.
Yes.
And we talked about elves. Next up, book three, I want to talk about wizards.
Yes.
Saruman and Gandalf.
Yes.
And Ents. And also a bit about Sauron and the cosmology / theology / spiritual worlds here going on. And then we'll talk about Gollum and the rings and the power of the rings.
Mm-hmm.
Also tomorrow, I want to talk about... Oh, in the next episode, I want to talk about the difference between sieges, battles, and fights, which is, is a fun one.
A big topic.
Well, not a big topic, but I have strong opinions about this.
I know.
And then maybe we'll wrap it up there. But then I think if we do a third podcast, I want to talk about men, women, and hobbits and kings.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that'll be its own thing. But I need to make... I've got enough notes for one more podcast, but for the last podcast, I'll have to make a few more notes because I...
I'm sure you can come up with
other stuff going on
for
there.
That.
But
yeah,
hopefully people have enjoyed this episode. What's that? Like an hour and 17 minutes, it says here.
It's a pretty chunky podcast.
So thanks a lot for listening. You can support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/ Luke Burridge if you've enjoyed this.
Yes.
And if you want to pay for the Audible credits and iTunes purchases that we did to talk about these movies and books.
Yes.
And if you want Juliana to do it. What else are we reading? Oh, no, let's do that at the end of the third podcast in this series.
Yes, that's really good.
Yeah. Follow me on Instagram, Blue Sky, Mastodon, Twitter. I'm not on Twitter anymore. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
Email me, luke@juggler.net. Oh, yeah, and also become my friend on Goodreads. That's what I wanted to do. Here we go.
Yes.
What are we on? Fellowship of the Rings. again, I'm not rating each of these books individually, but let's have a look here. So this has got a 4.40 star rating on Goodreads for The Fellowship of the Rings. Pretty good.
Yeah.
And among friends, so Mario gives it 5 stars. Scott, Julie, Diva Diane, Aaron, Jonathan, lots and lots of 5 stars here as well.
Yes.
Paul Forbes, I didn't finish it. Too boring. That's quite fun.
I totally understand.
More reviews here. John, 5 stars. Alex, yeah. Tom, 4, and lots of 4 stars. Paul Spence rated it 3 stars. This is the first time I read that I reread Lord of the Rings trilogy since the movies were released 20 years ago. Yeah, me too as well.
Mm.
It's interesting to see how well the books have aged. Still gives it 3 stars. Troy gives it 2 stars. This book is important, but it isn't good. Tolkien introduced many ideas and tropes to the general public, but others have built on his work. Yeah, you know what? I still think there's enough in this book that the original version of these tropes. But he's working within tropes already, which I want to talk about more when I talk about The Ring, etc. Right, that's it from me.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.